Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sutter, and my co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page. You are already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. We're joining you guys for a special Saturday episode here because we missed out on Wednesday for you guys. We're finishing off your mailbag questions on Twitter. If you're not already doing so, go and follow the Locked On page and submit some more questions. Maybe we'll do another mailbag here later on this season. But let's dive right back into our question. The first part was talking a lot about the team and about the draft overall, but I'll throw it your way first, Brent. Do you have our first question for part two?
Yeah, go follow at Locked On PHX Suns to chime in. We're definitely going to do at least a season end mailbag. We've been doing them basically every quarter of the season. So this is the three quarters, and then we'll have the end of the year one. You're coming up in, wow, like only a month and a half. So yeah, definitely follow more. And yeah, it's flying. So keep up with everything we do and send in any questions. So yeah, this one is from Dre Wallace. We see a lot of questions from you in here, Dre. So thank you. You're at Dre Wallace. And question was, I'm excited to see us back at full strength. Based on what you've heard, is TJ going to return to the starting lineup or is he destined for a super sub bench role? And does Melton start or Tyler Johnson? I mean, I don't think we've heard anything, partially because Tyler Johnson coming in and then TJ and Melton starting to recover from their injuries all kind of happened over the All-Star break, and now they're on a road trip. So we haven't been to a Suns game for like 2 weeks, and we won't be at another one for about a week and a half. They have a really long trip away from home. But what would you guess here if you had to think? I mean, we were talking about a little yesterday how surprising it was that Jackson started alongside Oubre, but what about when Warren comes back? He won't be healthy tomorrow. The Suns just sent that out. But when he does come back and Melton starts playing again, how do you kind of see things shaking out?
This is just how I'm trying to read Igor's mind here, just based off the rotations. But it seems like Oubre and Bridges are the threes on this team, and Jackson and Warren are the fours. So that's not how I would do it. I'd put Oubre at the four, and then I'd put Bridges at the three. But just based on what I've seen so far this season as far as rotation building with Igor, I think – once TJ Warren is back, I think we're going to continue to see Bridges on the bench, by the way. I don't know why, but that was a confusing change that they made because I think McKelver has been the third best on the team this season. But thinking more to Oubre and Jackson now starting, I think once TJ Warren is back, I think we're going to see him start alongside Kelly Oubre and see how that goes for the last 20 or so games. But let me throw it back your way about TJ, because they announced today, Suns PR did, that he has officially been ruled out for tomorrow's game in Atlanta. So what do you think about just, if he's not back in a week and a half for the Pelicans game or past that for the Lakers game, do you start to get worried about his ankle at that point, maybe shutting him down?
Oh, yeah, you're right. That would be today. We're recording this on Friday, so the Saturday game, he will not be active. It's surprising to me that he not only has he not played in a while, somebody pointed out, like, calling me all kinds of crap for not understanding what the injury is on Twitter. Like, I don't know who that was, but I don't even – the point isn't – that I think this guy is going to like never recover from his injury, but it is puzzling and sort of has to make you worry a little bit that he originally injured the right ankle, TJ Warren, in late November, then came back for, I think he played like two more games, then sat out for, I think, eight games, then came back and then now sat out for five. And then he's been sitting again since. So it's like, it's been back and forth for almost 3 months now. I think that is a little bit of a concern. And so I don't know, even if assuming he'll be kind of right back into things is fair at this point. But when he does get back, I would say I agree with you that Jackson is seemingly the backup four, and Oubre and Bridges are the threes. And maybe that's fine. I don't, who am I to say? I don't think there's a perfect recipe here, but I think we'll see Warren start again. I think it'll be Oubre and Warren in the starting lineup and then Jackson and Bridges off the bench and kind of see what happens there. I would expect Melton to be on the bench. I would expect Tyler Johnson to continue to start unless this crazy cold shooting keeps up from him.
I mean, you got to think about, I agree with Melton, by the way, and the Johnson discussion. I think that if he keeps his cold shooting up, that he might be going to the bench in about 5 or 10 games once Melton gets back in his groove. But let me throw back one more question about that and just thinking more about the possibility with the team overhauling this roster. How big is it for the front office to see these four wings together for the final 20 or so games to see who maybe they keep, because maybe they only keep one or two of those guys.
That's exactly what I wrote this morning or yesterday morning at Bright Side of the Sun. Was one of the things I'm looking at the rest of the way through the year is just, it was mostly related to, is Kelly Oubre ever going to start? That was my initial question. I had to go back and change it last night, but he's starting now, but not in the way we thought. And I just think you need to see, you need to mix and match these guys. You need to get creative. You need to see, you know, who of the four plays the best together, who has the size to make it work, who has the shooting ability to make it work. And I think you have four imperfect and not all the way developed players, so that decision is tough. But, you know, TJ Warren is going to be a pretty good trade chip this summer if you want to do that. Kelly Oubre is going to be a restricted free agent who's probably going to get some interest around the league. So those two guys are kind of forcing the Suns' hand here, and I think you want TJ to get healthy, you want him to not rush it back, but you want to be able to see him a little bit more alongside some of these players before you have to start making those tough decisions, and there's just not a lot of games left to do it. So like I was hinting at last night or the Cavs recap, I think the important thing is that if they're going to get creative, they really need to go all in. I think we should see several different rotations, several different starting lineups, even when everybody's healthy, just to see what makes sense.
I'm right there with you. You have to start mixing things up, especially in a season like this one, 60 games in, where you're not making the playoffs at this point. You have 60 loss, or not 60 loss, you have 49 out of 11, or 49 out of 60 of those being losses. So really at this point, you have to start experimenting. You have to see what's working. You have to see who makes the team for next season, who's not on the trade block. So our next question here is from Damon R. at So The Chill, and he says, it's a two-part here. Is it possible that the team has played better without Devin Booker? And he says, and does drafting Zion Williamson realistically change his team's outlook? We'll start with Booker really quickly, because I've seen this brought up on Suns Twitter. I know we've hit on it, I think, last week in a podcast. That doesn't make sense at all. I just want to rehash this because, no, it still doesn't make sense at all to me. And I know they lost by 11 points last night with Booker to the Cavaliers, but it's the roster. It's the front office mismanagement with Booker. He has almost 60 teammates in 3.5 years. That shouldn't be happening. It's more than Anthony Davis. It's more than Kevin Love had in their first 4 years of the league. So they're on a historic, really, stretch here to really exceed or match those teams as far as that goes. And that's a worrisome sign long-term. But look, I crunched the numbers really quickly just because I've had so many fans ask me about it, Brent. And so far this season, Booker's played 45 games. And in the games that he sat out, the 15 of those, they're 3-12, so 20% win percentage. And the 45 he's played, they're 8-37 with a 17.8 win percentage. So they'll come in with the numbers discussion saying, oh, they are better technically without Devin Booker, but no, they definitely are.
No, and even more, I guess you could say, complex numbers. He's been very bad defensively, statistically this year after starting out pretty well. And part of that, I think, just shows up in the fact that the starting lineup hasn't been great defensively. A lot of the Suns' best players have not been in the starting lineup consistently. When you think about DeAnthony Melton, Mikal Bridges, Josh Jackson, even Rashawn Holmes, those guys aren't playing with Booker as much or haven't over the course of the full season done that. So part of it is just the rotation problems are why the numbers look so bad. But the Suns' offense has been 9.2 points better with Devin Booker in the lineup this year per 100 possessions. That's that difference, the 9.2 point difference between when he's on and off the court is in the 94th percentile in the league. So his impact on the offense is just about the very best in the entire NBA. And that's even considering the fact that it's, you know, so bad kind of no matter what. Their overall offense is so bad, but even when the difference between when Booker's on the bench and when he's on the court is humongous. So yeah, it's silly. I think they just need to kind of figure out the balance. I think that's what it is it's like you need to, we've seen them just have this frenzy, energetic, crazy defense that creates turnovers and gets out in transition and has a lot of fun when Booker's out of the game. That's how they beat Denver. That's how they beat, I think Booker played in that Milwaukee game, if I'm not mistaken, but that was how they were playing then. That's how they played in December a lot of the games. So they need to get back to finding how to balance Booker's scoring ability and his playmaking ability with also kind of having that balanced defense first approach. And I think that's what they're struggling with right now is how do we create a sustainable system on both sides that doesn't just rely on Booker going into isolation and getting heavy, you know, tough guarded shots. And I think that's really the problem right now.
You can see the adjustment too. Some nights Booker is very, not passive, so to say, but he's definitely trying to get others involved. And some nights he's just going and trying to get buckets and trying to keep the team in the game. So there's definitely been some weird sort of imbalance since he's been back. And starting the Indiana blowout loss when he first came back from his hamstring re-aggravation. And ever since then, it's been kind of out of whack. I'll have to dive into the numbers after we record today's podcast, because I'm actually interested now to see those numbers since his return. But let's go into the second part of this question here from Damon. He says, does drafting Zion realistically change his team's outlook? I say absolutely. I think to describe this, I know I've said this to a friend before, but if they did get Zion Williamson, I think it's just like a metaphorical thing where it's that Tom Hanks movie. I'm forgetting the name for some reason, but the ship scene where if I'm the captain now, I feel like that's what Zion Williamson would be like with Booker and Aiden, because I think from day one, you got to, I think Zion Williamson changes franchise. Absolutely. I think you saw talks to Resort Arena. I'm not even kidding with this, because he's a phenomenon on social media and everywhere. Zion Williamson's being talked about right now. So he's going to definitely sell tickets for the ownership. He's going to win you more games. He's going to fill a lot of the needs you had as far as defense, rebounding, assists, scoring. Literally every strength he has is a weakness on the Suns. So he covers a lot of those gaps as much as possible. And I think if you think about Brandon Booker, Ayton, and Zion, at that point, the switch has to be flipped.
Yeah, I think he would really, really just that switch being flipped. Exactly. That's what would innately happen if Zion enters the building here. And I agree that everything sort of changes. I like the Captain Phillips, that's what that movie's called, analogy there, that it would completely just flip the entire narrative about this team. Not only would they just have talent that they didn't have, they would fill a massive hole at power forward, even just the simple stuff like that. But one of the other things that I think is huge, and hat tip to David and Max, I finally subscribed to another Suns podcast. This is my first one ever. I really took the plunge here, and they were talking with Kellen about on their pod at 7 seconds or less about just the idea that whoever they draft this year, if they do end up taking somebody with their own first rounder, is it needs to be a guy who's going to be able to get better. I think that's the problem with Dragan Bender and Marquese Chriss and a lot of these other players, is just the lack of ability to, and the management's creating it for themselves, firing guys and instability, and the owner getting such a bad rap and all that. It's tough to play here, I feel like. And so they need somebody who's going to be able to just be self-motivated and rise above it and improve on their own. And unfortunately, that's just a fact, I think, at this point, and Zion's going to be able to do that. So I completely agree. And he would, whatever franchise he ends up with, is going to explode. I think there's going to be media everywhere. There's going to be, you know, social media is going to have a lot of purple and orange on it if he were to land in Phoenix, and he changes everything for any franchise that gets him.
Before we go on our next segment here, I just want to throw this hypothetical question at you based off of Zion's possible arrival. I know the lottery smoothies really changed things this year. It would have been 25% if the Suns finished the worst record, but now the top three is 14%. But let's say they do get Zion Williamson in a few months. What happens at that point if you're James Jones and you're named the full-time GM? You now have Zion Williamson, you have Devin Booker, you have DeAndre Ayton. Is that enough now with the arrival of Zion Williamson to attract the max free agent?
Hopefully. I mean, I think honestly that core, if Zion really reaches his ceiling, I think you could probably start to think about winning a lot without getting another huge superstar. I mean, you would try to, just because you never have too much talent, and you try to maximize the rookie contracts of Ayton and Williamson. But I think that level of talent is, I think Zion becomes probably the best overall player on the team, you know, and if they keep all those guys through their prime, and Booker being kind of the creator and initiator you would need, with Zion not really doing that. And I think those three guys are enough to at least compete in the playoffs on their own. So I completely agree.
Alrighty, guys, before we go on to our next segment here, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you're not already doing so, go and follow Locked On NBA now on Twitter. I think it's one of the more valuable resources on NBA Twitter altogether. Brent and I both follow the account, and both of our Twitter accounts are actually synced on there. I know you guys love our coverage over here on Locked On Suns and on Twitter at Locked On PHX Suns, but there's so many great voices out there on the Locked On Network that you might be missing out on, like David Locke in Utah, John Krause in Boston, Adam Mares and Denver, Jake Mass in New Orleans, Josh Wood, Locked On Fantasy. That's just naming a few, and there's so many other great podcasts around the network that we all listen to. So if you're not already doing so, go and follow at Locked On NBA Net to stay tuned in.
And before we go any further, I want to also remind you guys to check out Homie. Homie is a real estate service that cuts back the hassle and the endless fees that normally go into buying a house. Normally, this is something that is frustrating and just intimidating. And Homie completely takes that away. They make it easy. They give you the support you need, and they save you a ton of money in the process. Homie can sell any priced home for the same low cost of just $199 when you list and $1,299 when you close. That means that on average, Homie customers are saving over $10,000. These guys can also help you qualify for up to a $5,000 buyer refund to help with closing costs and help you get a loan with their team of real estate agents and lawyers to support you every step of the way. To learn more about my friends at Homie, text Homie, that's H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, pull out your phone and text Homie, that's H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. All right, we kind of did three questions in that last segment, so I will maybe take this one's a little bit more complicated and we can dissect it a little bit more, have just one question in here because we're also kind of running out. We've done so many now, but this is from SLO Bub, another guy who is constantly giving us great questions. Thank you, at Bub SLO. Any thoughts on ways of improving Booker's defense? He says, I feel as though most of it is bad habits and inconsistent effort, and had the idea of limiting his minutes so that he's only on the court if he's playing defense and rests if he isn't. First of all, I would react by saying I think Booker's at the point with how much he helps the team and how much he has earned playing time that you're not going to bench a guy like that at this point, and I don't think you should. We're just talking about the idea that the team is struggling to adjust to having Booker in there and how the injuries might have hurt that continuity. So to take him out as some sort of signal about defense, that doesn't typically go well, and I don't think it would help anything. But just the overall idea of his defense, and I mean, maybe you disagree if you think the resting thing might make sense, but how do you feel about his defense overall this year?
Ooh, it's been really rough. I thought we'd at least see some improvement, but the numbers aren't right in front of me, but I think he has kind of regressed in some categories on defense so far this year for the last year, which really surprises me. And you really hope going to his max contract, Brent, that he's going to start taking defense more seriously. He's going to lock in. I saw a sequence last night where he was just lollygagging, zoning off the ball, and Brandon Knight drove right by him on a cut to the back. It was his fault that happened. DeAndre was in position. Josh Jackson was in position. It was Devin Booker's fault on that one sequence there against Brandon Knight. It happened a couple times, too, throughout the game. So you just hope that Booker takes a little more emphasis on defense moving forward, because we've talked about before the James Harden comparison, which is been talked about throughout the season here on the podcast, that he actually started caring more about defense and the Rockets started improving. So I think that's kind of got to be a realization here with Devin Booker, that in his max contract, he's getting paid almost $30 million next year. He's got to really start improving on defense to really help this core improve it overall together.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to separate one mistake from another sometimes on the defensive end for this team. I think the lack of continuity has especially hurt the defense. We know the offense kind of had a system with Igor being in there and changing things. But I think on defense, it's been tough to even sort through like what they're trying to do. There was much more switching early in the season. They have been doing that a lot less lately. But Booker individually is just getting worse. I mean, not getting worse, but at the very least, not getting any better on defense. So never a guy who's gotten a lot of steals or blocks, basically right around career numbers for those categories, and the worst defensive box plus minus of his career, which is really just a summation of kind of his impact on the box score numbers, steals, blocks, the other team's shot making and all that stuff, just in one number. That's the worst of his career this year. So it's been really bad. I mean, I talked about how his offense has been just astronomically helpful for the Suns as a whole. His defense has been the exact opposite. The Suns' defense is almost 6 points worse per 100 possessions when he's on the court. Some of that, as I said, with the other number is playing with the starters, and that's always going to look a little bit better. But that's in the 9th percentile overall. So of all players at his position for that impact, 6 points worse is right around the bottom of the league. So there's really, it's kind of crazy to look at how different his offensive impact is versus his defensive impact. And that's, the Suns are just about even on both sides of the ball. They're 29th in both offense and defense. So it's not just a matter of the team being better at one end or the other. It's really a lot, shows a lot about what he's good at right now.
That's really interesting. The 94th percentile and the 9th percentile. Really, if Booker just got to like the 30th percentile or even like 35, 40, then that really, I think, changes a lot for this team. But let's go on to just quickly a next question here we can squeeze in for our next one. And it's talking about, it's at Joe Burgess here, by the way. Thanks for the question, Joe. He says, what players can you see the Suns using Tyler Johnson's expiring contract in a trade for between now and next trade deadline? And I outlined this in my story earlier this week on Brad's Side of the Sun. I really try to route as many teams I could think of on top of my head. And for me, it was Memphis, Washington, New Orleans, Orlando, Detroit, Cleveland, Toronto, and Portland. I think those are the teams you watch for that maybe you use Tyler Johnson on for names like Mike Conley, Beal, Drew Holiday, Aaron Gordon, Blake Griffin, Kevin Love. Names like that, I think you make sense for a guy like Tyler Johnson expiring because he's going to be nearly $20 million in salary. And if you add on Josh Jackson or TJ Warren, that's nearly a max lot.
Agree completely with all, most of those names. Blake is an interesting one that we hadn't really talked about, but I could definitely see, I mean, Detroit brought in a new coach and a new general manager. That's obviously their best player, so getting off of him would be a pretty big leap to take, and they're on track to make the playoffs this year, but especially if you look toward next February, things change pretty quickly. He's still pretty obviously overpaid, but compared to like John Wall or a player like that, he's at least going to contribute a pretty good amount on a, you know, in ways that are really going to help your team. I mean, he's a playmaker that would make the point guard position. You could probably go a different direction there, get somebody who doesn't need to be a super ball dominant guy and have Blake do some of that. And so he's somebody I'd be interested in. Not somebody we've heard anything about, but I like that idea.
Is there any other names quickly that you think of that maybe, I mean, I think all these names that were mentioned here are the ones that make the most sense just based off who is going to possibly blow it up, but
I got one.
What do you think?
I think, I mean, it's not out of the blue, but it's somebody we haven't talked about in a while. That's Damian Lillard. I mean, he was pretty fed up last season with the Trailblazers, met with the owner. They went on that run, but then they got swept in the first round of the playoffs and after finishing third in the West this year. Haven't heard a ton from him. He seems pretty okay with everything and is playing as usual all-star amazing level, and they're gonna, you know, be pretty high in the standings. We'll see what they do in the playoffs. But the owner passed away. That was Paul Allen, who I you know, people know as a Seahawks owner, Blazers owner as well, and that could change things. They're rumored to be potentially for sale. That's a team that is going to go into the Seattle rumors pretty quickly if a new owner takes over that isn't attached to Portland. So you could see something coming loose there, and Lillard's clearly the best player of any of those guys.
That actually does make a lot of sense. And really, based off of what ownership wants to do, they could really want to rebuild when you see just what's going on in the Western Conference right now. So that's a really good name you brought up there with Damian Lillard. But before we go on our next segment here, there's been a lot of good questions, guys, to appreciate. And we're going to wrap up here with our final few questions. But, Brent, do you have anything to say about the Locked On Network?
Yeah, I want to just remind everybody to check on the Locked On NBA show. I want to get you guys in that groove because it's an awesome show, 30 minutes a day, Monday through Friday, just like our Locked On Phoenix Suns show here, but keeping you up to date with everything league-wide. So trade deadline just finished up, but we've got the Eastern Conference playoffs ramping up here, the playoff race, standing race into what could just be a bloodbath of incredible playoff games every night in that conference. We'll be keeping you up to date there. Can the Warriors do it again? How's Boogie doing? All the questions all throughout the league, Monday through Friday, in the little bite-sized episodes that you love here on Locked On Suns. So go subscribe to Locked On NBA and keep up with everything going on around the NBA. Alrighty. Here's one question that's pretty quick here, and it's from Jared at JRenko. If you can keep only one moving forward, who is it? And that is Tyler Johnson, Ele Okobo, DeAnthony Melton, based on talent, not contract. I actually don't know if Johnson really fits in there, because I don't think he's a guy where they're like really ramping up to pay him.
Yeah, he's a trade piece, not like a long-term asset.
Exactly. So I guess we could just go with, for assuming Johnson's not part of the long-term plan, just Okobo or Melton. That's pretty interesting, I guess.
This seems pretty easy for me just off what I've seen on the NBA level so far. I think it's, without question, DeAnthony Melton.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's Melton just because of the two-way ability, because we're seeing it already. I mean, he's older. I think he's like 2 years older than Okobo, but still, I think he's been a lot better on offense than I think anyone could have imagined as a rookie, and the defensive impact, especially as a team defender, the steal numbers, it's right there already, right in front of your eyes, and we're going to get to see it a little bit more. He'll probably play tonight in Atlanta and pick up where he left off, hopefully, if he's fully healthy and everything goes well. So that's my call. That's my pick too. But do you think, what do you think Okobo's ceiling is, really quickly? Just if all goes well, this has been a rough rookie season, but I think he was about as raw as they come entering the league.
I think his ceiling is still NBA starter, to be honest. I mean, we've seen some really rough moments, but he has like a really explosive scoring package that I like. His defense, he has the length, he has the wingspan to at least be competent on defense, which I like. He's shown flashes of that so far too. I think he could be a low tier starter, maybe an average starter, but I think his most optimal role, his most realistic role, is probably a seventh, eighth man off the bench with about 20, 25 minutes per game, putting in like 10 points per game. What do you think?
I think I think ideally he's probably like your sixth man scorer, Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford, all that Will Barton type of player. I think that's kind of what he is in my mind at his, not necessarily his ceiling, but just like that's probably the way a good team would try to use him.
I'm totally there with you. I think Okobo is going to be one of the more interesting guys to watch next year. I know in our podcast earlier, I think it was a few weeks ago, you said that Okobo might not be on the team. I think I agree with you there as far as trades go this summer. I think he's, if we had to pick one point guard, it's going to be on the, that probably has to leave. It's going to be Elie Okobo. So based on what we've seen so far, D'Anthony Melton, his defense.
I think he'd be the most likely. I think I would say he's the most likely guy to get traded, period.
I agree.
I don't know. Maybe that's a random guy to throw out there, but I just think he's the most extraneous player on the team.
Especially when you see Melton and what the point guard still being a need according to ownership and management, I think that, yeah, they're not going to keep two young point guards around. If you have to pick one, it's definitely going to be Elie Okobo. But our last question here for the mailbag, appreciate you guys as always with the questions. And we're going to go here to Blom Phil at Philip Lynn Blom. At Zion and Ja Morant are off the board. Would you take DeAndre Hunter at number 3 over one of the wings? So like Jarrett Culver or RJ Barrett. So this is a draft question here to wrap things up, Brandon. What would you say? And we'll throw a trade option there too as well. So if they do end up with number 3 overall pick, would you rather take DeAndre Hunter, one of the other guys, or trade it?
I mean, I actually think we probably shouldn't include trade it, because I think you and I both are in agreement that trading it is A, more likely, and B, just the better value play at that point with the options at point guard. So yeah, you and I agree there. So why don't we just do who you would take? And I don't even think I have Ja Morant second. I have RJ Barrett second, and got into this debate a little bit with actually another question here. Guy who asked a question, Alessandro Cozzi, the other day about just like whether Ja even makes sense. I think he does, just because he's a good player, and if you're drafting BPA and you get like the third or fourth pick, then that's probably just what you should do. But I think Hunter's probably second for me, honestly, in terms of fit in Phoenix. I think RJ Barrett's a far better player. Ja Morant's probably a better player as well, but he's a picture perfect example of what you want at the four spot, next to Ayton, next to Bridges, next to Booker. It's a pretty seamless role player to just slide in there. So I'm super high on DeAndre Hunter.
I'm right there with you. I have Hunter really creeping back into my top 5 on my big board update I'll be doing later this month on Brightside. And I think it's between him and RJ Barrett. I think I would still go RJ Barrett at number 3, just off BPA and also with Igor's system. I'd at least try it, just because we didn't get to see Doncic with his system with Booker. I want to see just what Barrett and Booker look like. I know you aren't a fan of the pairing, but with just how many hits to the dartboard that they've already had already, why not just try it with RJ Barrett? And if it doesn't work, and they could use him as a trade chip, like I said earlier. So maybe that makes sense to use the rights to RJ Barrett as a guy to get like a Drew Holiday eventually. But
yeah, well, especially considering what with the Pelicans and just any number of teams, you think about how the Anthony Davis situation, I think, is just going to hold up a lot around the league. So, you know, Terry Rozier is involved with the Anthony Davis situation. Lonzo Ball is involved. Drew Holiday is involved. There's a lot of these guys who are going to be wrapped up in those negotiations. So I think you could see the Suns take a player, whether that's Morant, whether that's Barrett, whether that's Cam Reddish, or any of these top 5-ish prospects, and then just hold on to them. And that doesn't mean they're going to be playing for the Suns at Summer League, but it could just mean that they take a good player and just that player takes the place of this pick as their asset in trade negotiations.
To close things out, I wanted to ask you this because just related to the draft, it feels like with everything James Jones has said, with everything that Robert Sarver said in the preseason, it feels like at this point that it's Zion Williamson or bust. We talked about that before on this podcast, but it just seems like if they don't get number one, they have to trade it because at this point, you're going to be 10 years next year if you don't make the playoffs without even sniffing the playoffs, to be honest. And you had that 1 year magical year in 2014-15, but outside of that, it really has been close. And with an impatient fan base, it looks like an impatient owner, it really just seems like you can't sell this franchise on like a Ja Morant or DeAndre Hunter at a 3 or 4, or even a guy like Jarrett Culver. It just seems like the fan base would revolt at that point.
I agree with you, but mostly just because I think the pick is the most valuable asset to trade. So I just think the more likely outcome, if they do try to upgrade their roster via trade, is that pick becomes a pretty key part of any of that. So I don't think that taking another young player just in and of itself is a disaster. I think you could, what part of what I was trying to say with that Twitter argument that I got into with Alessandro was just, I don't think drafting Ja is just impossible to conceive of. You could draft Morant and then also somehow get a point guard, then that's fine. He can be the backup. Maybe you get rid of Eliakobo and the roster just looks a whole lot different. That makes sense to me. I could see a path to that happening. I can't see a path to getting somebody at the level of Drew Holiday or something without this pick being involved. And that's just why I think it's so likely that it gets moved, because there's so much pressure to upgrade and there's just not a lot else that's a super enticing asset except for this pick. So I just think the more likely scenario is just they use that pick to get better.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on as far as we get to the May draft lottery. Jonathan Givony appeared on Adrian Wojnarowski's podcast, The Woke Pod, today, and he said that if you fall in the range of 2 to 4 on draft, and I expect to hear a lot of trade talks of those teams, because outside of Zion, there's no real franchise-changing star. So I think it's still something to keep in mind. I think it makes a lot the most sense, like we've been talking about throughout the podcast, but really throughout this season, especially with James Jones' comments on Brightson. I think it makes a lot of sense. They're going to use the ammunition for a trade with that pick if they don't get number one. But anything else you want to hit on as far as today's mailbag goes?
No, thanks for listening. Thanks for bearing with us with the Wednesday missed episode there, and for listening into the double mailbag here.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. This took about 45 minutes for each episode, so appreciate you guys listening.